Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Mem Hey Amud Aleph, six lines down. Machiz Rava. Rava announced, Vitem Rapapa, others say that it was his student, Rapapa. The Salkin Le'ela, those that go up, or the Nachtin Le'tatan, those come down. It's a veiled reference to Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, meaning both locations, both in Eretz Yisrael and those in Bavel, whoever is traveling back and forth should convey this information. Hai Bar Yisrael, a Jew, the Zabin Le'chamra Yisrael Chavrei, who sells a donkey to his fellow Jew, and all of a sudden a non-Jew comes, va'anis lei mine, takes it away from him, confiscates it, takes it away from him. Dino demafsi lei mine. There is an obligation, the din is, that he has to be mifatzeh him. Now the word pitzui in the modern Hebrew is compensation, remuneration for damage that was done. So there are Rishonim that read it that way over here. On the other hand, the Rashbam reads the Mifatzile, he brings a pasuk from Tehillim, actually the same parak we're about to quote in a minute in the Gemara, that says, Hapotzeh et David Avdo Micherev Ra'ah. So there, Hapotzeh et David Avdo obviously does not mean to compensate, but rather Lahatzil, to save. That you have to make whatever efforts it is to return the object from this individual who confiscated it. Now we're going to see in a second, the Gemara is going to qualify all of this. But the idea is that if this was another Jew who had confiscated the property, then the seller would have to do nothing in that case, because the buyer can go to court, and then the court would adjudicate the case and tell us whether the other individual deserves the property or doesn't deserve the property. The individual who shows up here, grabs the property, has no witnesses to the fact that he really owned it, but makes a claim that whoever sold him the property, it wasn't his. It was really the Akum's. That's the Akum, the non-Jew that shows up here, says, this is my property, I don't know what you're doing with it, and I don't know what the guy who sold it to you was doing with it, I'm just taking it back. Had that been a Jew, he's lacking the proper evidence, he doesn't have Edim. So the court would then give it back to the buyer, or if there are Edim, then he'll take it away from the buyer, and the buyer would have recourse against the seller. But here we have a situation in which the non-Jew is taking it without evidence, and the courts, we don't know what they're going to do, whether they're going to allow this to stand or not stand. And therefore, we want the seller to get involved to protect the buyer in this case, because the buyer himself, we'll see in a second, may not know as to whether it really belonged to the seller or didn't belong to the seller. So the Rashbam says, the obligation then is, v'yavi edim, the mocher will have to bring edim, v'idonim akum. And then he'll have to go to court with the Akum. Ulai yotzienu miyado. Maybe he will be successful at getting it back. The Akum, the Tzaiti Didinim, they do listen to the courts, but at least maybe the non-Jewish courts. They may not listen to Beit Din, but if he can take him to secular court and prove his position, then he has to do that. V'davka Akum. That's definitely only by an Akum. Aval, ke'anis le'Yisrael, if there was a Jew that did it, lo mavtile, yitvenu bedin. Then the mocher doesn't need to get involved. The buyer can take him to court and make demands of him. The Jewish courts, the Beit Din, will not allow him just to abscond with the chamor if there's no evidence to that fact. So the reason that with the Jew, he doesn't have any obligations is because the buyer will take him to court. The Jew has no evidence. The case will be over. The buyer will get his object back. That may not be true in the non-Jewish system. If the non-Jew says, it belongs to me, and the non-Jewish court says, well, he says it belongs to him, it's going to stay with him, then we obligate the mocher to bring the contrary evidence and to show that it really was his, or that he has deemed that it was his, in order to restore it to the hands of the buyer. The buyer is just not going to have this information, is not going to be able to adjudicate the case, because he's the new owner of the object. He wasn't the original owner of the object. So that's where we ask the mocher to intervene on his behalf, or make efforts, really, on his behalf to restore the object to the buyer. V'lo Amran, Elisheinu makir bashi bat chamuro. It's only true if the individual doesn't know for certain that it belonged to the seller. This is the expression that we had in yesterday's daf. And again, yesterday's daf, we're talking about a para, but it looked like it was lifted from here. Here, bat chamuro means that the donkey that he bought was the daughter of his donkey, meaning that the ownership is clear over here. The buyer knows that the mocher's ownership is free and clear, and that the person who's coming and confiscating the property is definitely lying, or is just a anes. He's just a marauder taking the property away. Aval makir ba'ashribat chomoro, lo. The only time that we obligate the mocher to intervene is where the buyer is uncertain as to who owns the property. Because in that case, he could say, could be the goy, could be the Jew, get the other Jew involved to adjudicate the case. But in a case where he knows, the buyer knows for certain that the seller was the owner of the property, over there, he knows that the guy who took it from him was just a marauder or a thief, just confiscating it, and his claim that it belonged to him is completely false. In that case, the original owner is not going to make any difference in the case, because the case doesn't really revolve around ownership. The ownership was clear. This is about someone stealing, and he stole from the buyer. So it's the buyer's issue, not the seller's issue. Velo amran el delo anisle didei ulu ukva. It's only true, again, if he did not take the donkey and the saddle. Avanisle didei ulu ukva, if he took the donkey and the saddle, lo, that would not be the case. So here again, the donkey, he might have a claim that it belongs to him. The saddle, either it belonged to the buyer, or a saddle is a non-identifiable object, and therefore the akuma comes along and says, oh, that's my donkey and my saddle. We don't believe him with regards to the saddle. Since we don't believe him with regards to the saddle, we already start to question his authority with regards to the donkey itself. That's why if he takes both items, then the buyer has no recourse to the seller and tell the seller, get involved here. The seller says, what are you talking about? It's clear that he has nothing to do with his ownership. He's just taking whatever he can get his hands on because he took the donkey and the saddle. Had he taken the donkey and left the saddle, that'd be strong evidence that his belief or his claim that the donkey belonged to him, the Akum saying that, would be believed because he left the other item behind. It's similar to a crime scene where they find a cadaver with a wallet. They say then this was obviously not a theft, because if they wanted to steal, they would have taken the money, they would have taken the wallet or the jewelry that they were wearing. The fact that they didn't take it means that the motives were different. Similar over here. If he doesn't take the saddle, that means that his motives are not monetary. He's not just stealing. A theft, he would have stolen everything. The fact that he left the saddle behind means that he really believes it is his. So in that case, you would have recourse to the seller and tell him get involved, because it's clear that the outcome thinks he has a real claim. On the other hand, if the outcome is just cleaning him out and taking everything in sight, then it's harder to say that the seller should get involved here, because the seller's involvement is not really what's driving the case. This is just a matter of theft, and the buyer needs to take care of it. Amemar amar, avil leko kohani, lo. Even if you have none of these things, no. My taima, midi yodo destamovi kochavim anasu. We have a belief that in these situations, in general, the individuals are thieves. Shenamar, asher piem diber shav, v'yiminam yamin shaker. Verikin te'ilim that we quoted before, apotzeh David Abdo, over here says that these individuals who are engaging, battling, or fighting with them, are PM Diber Shav, they don't speak the truth. And their whole conduct is a conduct of falsehood or theft, and that there's no honesty or fair claim being made over here. So there's a general statement. Obviously, it's not a general statement about the Akum as a whole. It's a general statement about the circumstances or situations at that time. That generally when an Akum came and just confiscated some Jew's property and says, hey, it's all mine, their general understanding was that that person had no rights to this. It wasn't theirs. But they felt that they had the ability to pick on the Jews or to confiscate the Jews' property without any recourse. And because of that, they felt empowered to steal the property or confiscate the property. So the majority of individuals found in these positions, generally we know that they're stealing and not coming with a fair claim. Given that's the case, then we would not force the mocher to get involved, because the mocher's involvement is not really going to change the circumstance. It's a problem of theft, and the buyer's got to deal with it, because the mocher is not really the party that's going to make a difference in this situation. All right, now we move on back to the Mishnah. In the Mishnah, we had a list of individuals who cannot establish a chazakah, and the Gemara is going to go one by one through these individuals. The first of which was Uman in lo chazakah. Craftsmen cannot establish a chazakah. It's not a chazakah on 3 years. Like when you talk about property and you've been there for 3 years, this is a chazakah of metaltalin, which is what we discussed in the Mishnah, that in order to establish chazakah of metaltalin, possession is 9/10 of the law. If it's in your possession, you have the chazakah on the metaltalin. And a motzi michavero alav araya. So any craftsman that has something that is part of his work, or something that could have been in his work, in that instance, if he comes along and he says, you know what, this is mine, and it was sold to me, we don't believe him because in all likelihood, the product ended up in his hands because of the fact that he was working as a craftsman. So he doesn't gain a chazakah just through possession. He's going to have other evidence to the fact that he bought it, not simply his possession. The shoemaker makes a claim that somebody sold him the shoes. He's not believed because we assume the shoes are there because he got the shoes to work on as a shoemaker. And therefore he needs other evidence or outside evidence to corroborate his statement that he bought it. And he can't just through chazakah establish ownership. So whereas Amar Rabba, lo shna elisha maser lo be'edim. That's only true if the individual who gave it to the craftsman gave it with edim. Ava masar lo shlo be'edim, if he gave it to him without edim, mitoch shiuchol amar lo yu dvarim me'olam, so he could say, this never happened, ki amar le'inami lukuchabi adi mehemen. Then he can be believed when he says, I purchased it. So here there are a number of layers to this. We're going to see in a second in the Gemara, and this is going to come in very important. What Rabba says over here is, edim are the pivotal issue here. If you gave it to the Uman with edim, if you gave it with witnesses, then the Uman can never establish a chazakah without counter evidence. Because the edim now make it clear that he came into possession of this object in a way that he was a workman and not as an owner. Given that, he cannot establish ownership unless he has evidence to show that something happened that changed the status of this object. Now, Rabba believes that whether ra'ah or shelo ra'ah, these are the terminologies, whether we know that he still has it in his possession, or whether we don't know that he has it in his possession. Even if we see the object with the uman, because there were no edim to the fact that it was given over, he is believed. Or in the case where we don't see the object, obviously there he is believed. Everybody agrees that if you gave it to the uman without edim, and nobody knows whether the uman has it now or not, then the uman is believed to say that he bought it and it was his, because you're lacking any form of evidence that would block the uman's claim. You don't have edim that you gave it to him as a craftsman. And number two is we have no idea that it's in his possession right now, which means he could claim that he returned it. Since he can claim he returned it, he's believed to say that he purchased it at this point in time. What Rabba says is if one of those pieces of evidence changed, which is edim, if it was granted with edim, then the uman is not believed. He has no rights, he cannot establish a chazakah. Without edim, he can establish a chazakah because of a migo. The migo is that he could claim lo yu dvarim me'olam. It never happened. Nothing of this happened. No edim to corroborate this. Lo yu dvarim me'olam, so therefore he's believed to say lukuchahi biyadi, that I purchased it. But you're both asking, the Rishonim all ask, which is, you can't say, lo yu dvarim me'olam. You can't say that it means, this never happened, nothing ever happened over here, because the item is there, and it's possibly ra'ah, that we see it's with him. So we know something happened, so why is it with him? So the claim is not lo yu dvarim me'olam, but rather, lo yu dvarim me'olam, you have to reinterpret to mean, not that we never transacted, or we never interacted, but rather, the way that the Rishonim explained it over here is, but that's what here says, in the Faresh, mitoch she'ayah yachol omar, in biyadi klal, don't say that lo yu dvarim me'olam means that I never had it. Dahabra amairi. It's a case, according to Rabba, even if you identify the object with the uman, he still has this migo. So he can't claim lo yu dvarim me'olam, the object never came into my possession. We see it in his possession right now. So lo yu dvarim me'olam cannot be this. Elehachi perusho. Mitoch shilamar lo yu dvarim me'olam shibali yodo b'torat umanut. It wasn't given to me as a craftsman, ela b'torat mecher. But it was given to me as a sale. Inami, atami charto l'acher, v'acher mecharo li. You sold it to a third party, and the third party sold it to me. Lo yu dvarim me'olam is not a complete denial that the object is with me. It's just a denial that you have your claim that it was given to me as a craftsman. I say it came into my possession as not as a craftsman. Either I bought it from a third party, or you sold it to me. Given that he can make that claim, and there's no evidence to the contrary, because there's no edim to the effect that he gave it to the uman as an uman, therefore, he has a valid claim in saying that. Given that valid claim, migo, now when he says he sold it to me, we are going to believe him. Believe him in that instance. Now the Balei HaTosafot ask over here, Vim tomar, ma'iria uman, de'ein lo chazaka. What do you mean that the uman doesn't have a chazak over here? Hey, chad amasu lo be'edim. When you give it over the edim, afilo acher nami. Why is this unique to a craftsman? This would apply even to lay people as well. If you have evidence or edim that show that you gave it over to a lay person as a pikadon, or you lent it to them, any form of evidence that shows you didn't sell it to him, then the buyer, quote-unquote, or the layperson over here cannot establish a chazaka through possession. Because we have evidence of the fact that it came into his possession, not as a sale. And without contrary evidence, we don't say his ownership will be determined by possession. Because possession shows nothing over here, because we have a deem to the contrary, that it came into his possession in a manner that wasn't a sale. So what the Baal Tosfot are asking is that it seems, and we're going to see this later in the Gemara, is going to ask this explicitly, that this din is only applicable by a woman, not by somebody else. What the Baal Tosfot are asking is, wait a minute, how could it be that you're claiming that this is unique to woman? This would apply not only to an woman, but even to a layperson. Given that, why do you say over here, Rabbah, that if it's Masar Be'edim, the Uman cannot establish a Chazakah, even a layperson, if it was Masur Be'edim, that say that it was given as a Pikadon and not as a sale, then he also can't establish a Chazakah. So what Baalei Tosfot say is, V'eshlamar, Kagon Shemasalo Be'edim Stam. It was given over with Edim. Edim witnessed the fact that the object was given. That's it. They have no information as to why the object is given. Over here, we will bifurcate the din and say, by a layperson, the layperson can say, I bought it from him. I purchased it. The Edim say, we saw it transferred, ownership. We don't know if it was transferred as a picadon or a sale. The layperson has a right to say it was given to him as a sale, and that will not contradict the Edim. On the other hand, the Uman, if you have Edim that you gave it to a craftsperson, even though the Edim have no idea why you gave it to a craftsperson, the default is that you gave it to a craftsperson to work on. That is the default scenario. So in that situation, the Edim will prevent the Uman from getting a chazaka. They will not prevent a layperson from getting a chazaka, but they will prevent an Uman from getting a chazaka. So that's what's unique about this case. According to Rabbah, number one is you have Edim. According to the Baal Tosfot, the Edim are just testifying stum without any information as to why it was given. That's why by a layperson, the layperson could still establish a chazaka and not be undermined by the Edim. Craftsman is undermined by the Edim because the generic transaction or interaction between the parties is a situation in which you're giving it to him to work on. Therefore, if you have Edim that it was given to him, that's enough to establish that you have given it to him to work on, and he'll have to bring evidence to the contrary, and he can't make a claim, I bought it from you. So that's Rabbah's position. Again, Rabbah's position rests on, number one, that there are Edim that it was given, and number two is, it doesn't matter whether we know or don't know that the Uman now has the product in hand. Even if we know he has it in hand, then if there's a lack of Edim, he is believed because of the Migo. We don't know that he has it, and there are no Edim, clearly then he's believed with the Migo. So the Uman has Nemanut if there are no Edim. He lacks Nemanut if there are Edim. Now, the Rashbam over here and the Baalei Tosafot ask the same question, which is, how is this different than an object that normally is given Hashil or Haskir? We said before in the Mishnah, and we mentioned in the Gemara before, that if you are in possession of an object that people normally lend out, or people normally rent out, you cannot make a claim that my possession is evidence of the fact that I own it. Because people normally lend out. If people lend out their rakes, or their hose to other parties, then if the other individual has it, and he says, I bought it from you, he's not going to be believed, because they just as easy, he could have been borrowing it, or he could have rented it, and he's making a claim that he bought it, now all of a sudden, now you're going to have evidence that you actually bought it from him, because people normally borrow these tools from their neighbors. So the Rashbam, the Baal Tosfot, why is that different by an Uman? The Uman over here, we're saying, we know he has the object, we have no Edim to the fact that it came into possession, he's believed with the Migo. Why is the Uman believed with the Migo, and a neighbor is not believed with the Migo? Which is your question. So this is the Rashbam's distinction. The Rashbam runs the distinction like this. This is not similar to the case where it's an object that's normally lent out or rented. And the layperson says, your neighbor says, I bought it. Because over there, the original owner has witnesses to the fact that it was his. Even though we have no edim to identify the fact that it was actually lent out or rented out, when it comes to your neighbors, you lend or rent to anyone. You don't usually use me as your craftsperson. I mean that a neighbor is a neighbor. That's a generic individual. You can't say, I don't lend to my neighbors or I do lend to my neighbors. He lends to all his neighbors. Since he lends to his neighbors, no neighbor has a right to make a claim. Numan has a claim to say that you don't usually use me. You use the other guy. Since you use the other guy, now I have it. There's no proof just because it's in my possession that you gave it to me as an Numan. That's where the Rashbam distinguishes. Tosafot quotes that, and the Ri says, Afilu ragila takein etzlo. Even if it's normally the dry cleaner that you use, or the shoemaker that you use, you still, the craftsman can have a claim. And that is because of the difference between nemanut. This was a question that you were asking, which is, by neighbors, a person is not discerning about whether they are trustworthy, not trustworthy. You generally lend out your objects to neighbors because you are neighbors. You're not checking up on his nemanut. You're not investigating whether he is a good craftsman, not a good craftsman. They're borrowing an object. You expect to get it back. And therefore, nobody can establish a chazaka that way because you'll lend it. If you have an uman, who, even if you normally use him, and now you have no edim that you gave it to him, and we simply either know that it's with him, or he's making a claim that it's with him, even though we don't know, in that case, the uman is believed. Because the uman can say to him, listen, you would only give it to a craftsman either that you trust, or you would do it with edim if you didn't trust the craftsman. The fact that you didn't bring edim over here, and you entrusted me with the object, means that you believe that whatever claim I make was a valid claim. And that's what I'm making. I'm making a claim that you sold it to me. And so what the Baal Tosafot point out is that the Uman has an advantage from the perspective that there are multiple artisans, craftsmen who work in this field. The fact that you chose me and did not use Edim means that either you sold it, and that's why you didn't need Edim, or you trusted me. If you trusted me, then you have to believe what I'm saying now. The fact that you didn't use Edim now becomes a burden on you because you should have used Edim if either you didn't trust me or you thought there might be issues or use a different craftsman. The fact that you used me without Edim is evidence of the fact that you're trusting me. Given that, then I should be believed, amigo. A neighbor can't make that claim. You could have given it to another neighbor. You could have done it with Edim. Neighbors are neighbors. They just show up in the house and then, what, you're going to have to raise Edim every time your neighbor wants to borrow something? That's a ridiculous request. So in that case, you can't establish a chazaka. By uman, where it's either something that happens on an infrequent basis, or you have choices of other craftsmen, the fact that you gave it to him with that edim really hurts your claim in this case. That's why the Baal Tosafot would say there's a difference between an uman and a layperson. Now, the other possible claim that this craftsman has is that if it was brought to him with edim, and the Edim say that he gave it to him, the way Baal Tosafot would say is they generically gave it to him, but even if the Edim say that he gave it to him to work as a craftsman, the craftsman can't make a claim that I returned it to you with Edim. He can't say, you know what, I returned it to you with Edim, but I'm sorry, those Edim have to be traveling now. They're overseas. So I did give it back to you with Edim, but the Edim are not here. Why can't we say that that's amigo? The amigo would be that he could make a claim that I returned it to with the Edim are not around. Therefore, he should be believed when he says, "Lekucha yibi adi," that I bought it from you. I returned it to you, and then I bought it from you. He should be believed because he could, if he wanted to lie, he could have lied with strong evidence and said, I had Edim, they just went away. That claim is not a valid claim because it's what's called Milta Davide le Gluye. It is an item that will come to light. His lie will eventually be discovered. Because if you claim that there were Edim and they went overseas, eventually those Edim are going to come back from being overseas. And when they do return from coming overseas, they're not going to corroborate your story. People only lie in a case where they're not going to be found out, or where there's nobody else who knows the evidence to the contrary. Over here, where he lies using a deem that can return or might upend his story, he won't do that. That's too risky a claim. So that's why it doesn't give him amigo over here, because the claim has to be a claim that is valid or would be successful enough a lie that he would be willing to take the risk in making such a claim. If it's too risky a claim, then we do not assign it to him. We do not assume that he does that. Right, so now, Amarle Abaye. Abaye challenges Rabba's position and says, Yochi, afilu be'edim enami. If that's the case, even with edim, you have amigo. Mitoch she'achod amar lo chegzarti lecha, because he says that I return it to you. Gamarle lo kukra be'edim mamin. When he says I bought it, he should be believed. What Abaye is arguing Rabba is clear that he has a fundamental machloket with Rabba over here. Abaye believes clearly that when you have something given to the craftsman with Edim, you do not need to return it with Edim. Given that, Abaye's question now to Rabba is valid, which is, well, if he can say I paid it back or I gave it back to you, then he should believe that I bought it. Because he could say I returned it to you and he doesn't have any obligation to bring Edim to return it, then since he could be made a claim that I returned it, Now when he says that I bought it, we believe him. But what's clear, according to Abaye, is that that's only true in a case shelo ra'ah, in a case where we don't know that the craftsman has the object in possession. Because since we don't know if he has it in his possession, he can claim I returned it to you. He can claim I bought it from you. We have no evidence to the contrary. On the other hand, if we see that he has the object in his possession, he can no longer say, I returned it to you, because it's in his possession. If he returned it, why is it in his possession? Oh, the kuchahi? That's a single claim. That's not amigo anymore. You don't have two claims. You don't have a claim, I returned it to you, therefore I'm believed because I bought it from you, because the return to you is no longer a valid claim because of the fact that he has it in his possession. Once we know he has it in his possession, he only has one claim, and that is bought. That's not a good enough claim. So what we have here is a fundamental machlok between Rabbah and Abaye. Rabbah believes that edim are the pivotal point. If there are edim that we are given over, then the uman is never believed because he has to return it with edim. The fact that he didn't return it with edim means that he won't be believed. He cannot establish a chazakah. On the other hand, Abaye believes that it has nothing to do with edim. It has to do whether we know it's in his possession or don't know it's in his possession. If you gave it with edim, he could return it without edim. There's no obligation to return it with edim. So what is the pivotal issue here? Is whether we know he has it or he doesn't have it. If we know that he has it, then his whole migo goes down the drain because he only has one claim, which is the kuchahi biyadi, and he won't be believed with that. On the other hand, if there is no evidence that it's in his possession, we don't know that it's in his possession, then he has a migo. Because there he can say, I returned it to you. And since he could have said, I returned it to you, we believe him when he says the kuchahi biyadi. So for Abaye, irrespective of whether it was given with edim or not, ra'ah, you have no migo. Lo ra'ah, you have a migo. For Rabba, it's just the opposite. Doesn't matter whether we know it's in your possession, don't know it's in your possession. If it was given with edim, you have no migo anymore. If it wasn't given with edim, then you have a migo. Amalei Rabba, misavart, what do you think? That mafkir etzel chavero beedim, eino tzarech lachzilo beedim. What's clear from Abaye's position is that when you deposit something with your friend with edim, he's under no obligation to return it with edim. Lo salkadatcha. That's not correct. Ela mafkid etzel chavero beedim, tzarech lachzir lo beedim. And so here is it laid out, the machloka between Abaye and Rabba. Abaye says that if you deposit something with edim, there's no obligation to return it with edim. On the other hand, Rabba believes that if you deposit something with edim, you have to return it with edim. And so therefore, Rabba sees the pivotal issue being whether it was given with edim. It's given with edim. Since he had to return it with edim, and he did not return it with edim, he has no ability to establish a chazakah of possession over here, because he has no evidence or claim here to show that it's in his possession because he bought it. The only claim he has is he could say he bought it, but he's not going to be believed because there's no other alternative claim that he could have made. On the other hand, if we don't have edim, all of a sudden, the whole world is open to him, because he could say, Lo yudvar me'olam, you never gave it to me as an uman. I bought it from someone else. I bought it from you. All those claims are valid claims, and now he gets amigo to be believed in this case to say, I returned it to you, and I bought it from you. Both of those will be a fair claim, because he could have just claimed that, Lo yudvar me'olam, I never got it from you as a craftsman. I simply bought it from you. That gives him a believability. The other hand, for Abaye, edim make no difference. If he gave it with edim, the craftsman's entitled to return it without edim. That entitlement gives him believability now in other cases, because he could say, I returned it to you, so now he can say, I bought it from you. If he wanted to lie, he should have just said, I gave it back. That will only be true if we don't know if he's in possession of the object. If we know he's in possession of the object, that all falls apart in this case, because we know it's with you, and you can't make the claim that I returned it to you. Now, the Baal Yad Tosafot asks over here, with regards to Rabba's position, that someone deposits with edim, has to return it with edim, and therefore there's no migo, why can't he say the following? He could have made a claim that they were stolen from him. Not only stolen from him, but stolen from him under gunpoint. It's a case where it's gnevat onis, and therefore he would have a claim to be patur as a shomer sachar. So Tosafot says there's still a migo here. Even with edim, depositing it with edim, he could have lied if he wanted to and say, no, I didn't return it to you, but it was stolen from me. Guys came at gunpoint and took all the stuff from here. So since he could have made that claim, he should be believed, l'kuchahi biyadi. And the Gemara in other places says that's a fair claim. Nansu is a claim that allows you to have amigo. Why don't we invoke that over here? So we have a number of answers that are given here. The Rabbeinu Tam in the Baal Yad Tosafot says, v'teretz Rabbeinu Tam, the vadai have a matzi there by the mifrachle. Abaye could have asked that question on Rabbah. He just comes up with a different question, and that leads us down a path where that no longer becomes a relevant question. But ain't Achanami. It was a good question. Abaye just didn't think of this question, and he goes a different path. The Rabbeinu Tam acknowledges that that was a fair question. It just never got asked. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot make a suggestion over here. V'yesh mifarshim. Da'ag dekamer hochad tzerich lagzir lo be'edim. Hani rotzeh liyot patur mishvu'ah. It's a case where he wants to return it and not have to take a shvu'ah. So if he returned it with a deem, then he's completely exempt from any shvu'ah because they have offsetting a deem. One that says that they deposited with him and he's got a deem to offset that and say that he returned it. In that case, he has no obligation of a shvu'ah. On the other hand, if he invoked the migo and said, Nansu, they were stolen from me, and therefore I should be believed that it's a kuchah ibiyadi, in that case he will have to take a shvu'ah. That migo, he will only be believed together with a shvu'ah. So what the Gemara is saying is, according to Rabbah, if you want to be exempt from your claim and not have to take a shvu'ah, that will only be true if you return it with a deem. If you don't return it with a deem, you'll have a migo, yes. He could have said Nansu, so therefore you should believe the kuchah ibiyadi, but we're still going to make you take a shvu'ah that it was the kuchah ibiyadi. That is the difference between whether you need to take a shvuah or not take a shvuah. The Tosafot notes that this all has to be before the institution of shvuat haseit. Because once shvuat haseit was instituted, even in a case where you brought it back with edim and you're kofar bakol, you have to take a shvuat haseit. So in that case, you're going to take a shvuah. So in that case, it wouldn't matter anymore. So he says, prior to shvuat haseit, what Rabbah is suggesting is that if you deposit with edim, you give it back with edim, you won't have to take a shvuah. It's a little difficult because we know that Shvuat HaZeit already exists in the time of Rav Nachman. And Rav Nachman is a Talmud of Shmuel, and is probably either a peer or a half generation older than Rabbah. So that means that the institution of Shvuat HaZeit was right around that time or a little before that time. And so it's hard to argue that Rabbah's whole position is in a case where there was no Shvuat HaZeit or before the institution of Shvuat HaZeit. The Baitos themselves are uncomfortable with their suggestion, because he says in the end, even according to one who says you have to turn to edim, kiika migo mehemen. If you have a migo, you're believed. Meaning that a migo is strong enough to act in the same way that edim would be required. And just like when edim are required, you don't have to take a shvuah, so too with a migo, you shouldn't have to take a shvuah. So given that, the Tosafot says that their answer isn't so strong, and that's why the Ramban offers the alternative. The Ramban suggests over here that there is no such migo. The migo works in situations where all other calculations are equal. Over here, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence that we have a problem, which is that normally a person gives an object to an individual as a craftsman. He says he returned it to him as a craftsman. He has no edim to that effect. That's a lot of circumstantial evidence against this individual. He is a craftsman. It was given to him with edim. He didn't return it with edim. And now he's going to claim believability through amigo. Amigo that is a little less probable type of amigo, which was it was stolen from him at gunpoint. You put all of that evidence together, it's very hard to believe this individual. It's very hard to invoke amigo in that case, where the amigo itself is a low probability amigo. And on top of that, there's circumstantial evidence that he probably had it as a craftsman, because we have a deem that was given to him as a craftsman. He claims he returned it, and we don't have any deem to that effect. Given all of that, then the migo is very hard to invoke in this case. So the Ramban says that even though maybe in other situations we would invoke such a migo, over here there's too much circumstantial evidence pushing against the use of the migo over here, especially given that it's a weaker type of migo. Right now, the Gemara says, Meitevei Abaye. Abaye asked the following question. Some say that the Girsa should be, and it probably makes more sense. Eitevei Abaye le Rabbah. That Abaye asked this question of Rabbah, which is, Ra'a avdo biyad uman, vitialito biyad kovis. If he sees his slave with this uman, or his cloak, or his clothing with the launderer, Omer lo, mativo, it's lecha. What are you doing with my stuff? So the craftsman says back to him, you sold it to me. You gave it to me as a gift. Lo amar klum. Whatever he says, we ignore. Bifanai, if the buyer says, Bifanai amartalo lemochro, if this third party says to the original owner, I witnessed you say in front of the craftsman that he should sell it to me, or that you sold it to him and that he could sell it to me, or that you gave it to him as a gift, divarav kayamim. Then we believe that which he said. Maishna resha, maishna seifa. What's the difference between the resha and the seifa? In the resha, the uman is not believed. In the seifa, the third party is believed, even though it came through the uman. I mean that even though it was through the possession of an uman, he is believed. What is the difference between the resha and the seifa? So in a couple of points. First of all, it's clear here that Ra'a Avdo doesn't simply mean that he saw the Eved with the other guy, or he saw the Talit. It means that he saw and he has evidence of that fact. He has a deem that also saw it. Not that just the original owner is a witness to this fact, but he has another two witnesses that agree that we see it in the possession of this other party. So that's number one. Number two is the idea of Avdo, his slave, being with another party. How can you establish a chazakah on a slave? We said before, things that are mobile, you can't establish a chazakah on them because the fact that they're in your possession is not evidence of ownership, because they could have walked over there. So the Rashbam says the case here is where he sent his Eved to be apprenticed to a craftsman and to learn the trade from the craftsman. So now the Eved has been there for 3 years. And we saw in our Mishnah that even though, in general, mobile items you cannot establish a chazakah with, if an Eved is there for 3 years, you can establish a chazakah. So that's what the Rashbam says here. It's a case where the Eved's been there for a long time. He's been there for 3 years with this craftsman. The original owner of the Eved comes along and says, what are you doing with my Eved? He says, you sold it to me. The individual says, no, I didn't. I sent him to train with you. He apprenticed to you for the last 3 years, and that's what he's doing over there. So that's the machloket between them as to who owns the Eved. Was it sold to the craftsman, or was he apprenticing with the craftsman? But by doing that, the Rashbam explains to us how you could have a chazakah here by an Eved, because possession of an Eved in of itself is not a chazakah that can establish ownership. Only if he's there for the long duration, he's there for 3 years. So he comes up with a situation or circumstance where he could be there for 3 years. So now the Gemara wants to know, what's the difference between the resha and the seifa over here? Amar Rabba, seifa biyotzei mitachat yidei acher. The seifa, it's a third party. Now, I already explained the braita as being a third party. Obviously, what's coming out of here is that the Havamina, based on Abayi's question, was that both cases we're talking about Uman. In one case we believe, in one case we don't believe. Which means that the explanation of the braita in the seifa would be that both cases, the object's in the hand of the Uman. In the resha, the case is that the Uman says that he bought it directly from the original owner. And in the seifa, he says he bought it through a third party. The Uman has it now, but he bought it through a third party who had bought it from the owner. Which obviously would present a problem for Rabbah's position as to why there is a difference here between the resha and the seifa if it came through a third party or it went directly to the Uman. Whereas for Abaye, he'll simply explain the difference between the resha and the seifa has to do with whether we know it's in the possession of the Uman, the resha. That's why he's not believed. Whereas the seifa, we aren't certain. We don't have evidence of the fact that it's in his possession. And that's why he's believed in the seifa. So what Rabbah is pointing out is that the seifa is miyotzei mitachat yidei acher. It's a third party that bought it. V'kamarle acher. The third party is saying, b'fanai amarta lo lemochro litno mematana. And the third party says, you told the craftsman to sell it, or that he were going to sell it to him, or that you were going to gift it to him. Migo, di bayamale minach zivante. The third party could just say, I bought it directly from you. Kamale nami bifanai amartolo lemochro devrav kayamim umehemen. Therefore, he is believed when he says it came through the craftsman. So even though going through the craftsman is a negative, because the craftsman can't establish a chazaka, nevertheless, since he had an alternate claim, which is just to say, I bought it directly from you, therefore he is also believed when he says it came through the craftsman to me. And I witnessed the fact that you said you were going to sell it to him, or you were going to grant it to him as a gift, or you sold it to him and you grant it to him as a gift. And therefore, when he sold it to me, I have no questions about the craftsman's ownership over here. And he's believed through amigo. So now the Gemara says, okay, that's a nice explanation for the seifa. Because in the seifa, there are no edim. Since there are no edim in the seifa, except for edim that we know it's in possession of this individual, we have no edim as to the fact that there was a transaction with the craftsman. That's why Rabba says the seifa is explainable. Tani mihat resha, the problem then is the resha. No matter how you explain the Seifa, like our Hava Mina, or like the way that Rabbo explains it, so it's not a problem for him, the Reisha, nevertheless, is going to be a problem for him. Ra'a Hechidami. What does it mean over here that he saw it? Idi Ikeidim. If we have witnesses that saw it, Lamili Ra'a. Why do we care whether you identify the object in possession of the craftsman? Neite Edim Vinishko. Bring your Edim that you deposited with the craftsman as a craftsman, and you'll take the item. Why does it matter the craftsman has it in his possession? Elav Daleka Edim. The circumstance here must be that there were no Edim that you gave it to the craftsman. V'chi Ra'a. Only if you know for sure he's in possession of it, Mia Tofi Slate, then you have a right to take it back for him. Given that, what Baye is proving over here is that the Reisha case must be a case where there were no Edim. Now that there are no Edim, according to you, Rabbah, when there are no Edim, you say that the guy has amigo and he's believed. So in the Reisha case, according to you, the Uman should be believed because there's no Edim identifying or giving evidence to the fact that you gave it to him as a craftsman. With the lack of Edim, according to you, Rabbah, it doesn't make a difference if we know he has the object or he doesn't have the object, he's believed with amigo. Meantime, the only thing the Braita says is that we know he has it. Ra'ah. We see it with him, but there are no Edim here. So given that there are no Edim in Ra'ah, it seems like me, Abaye says, that the pivotal issue is whether we know he has it or we don't know he has it. If we know he has it, he lacks amigo. If we don't know he has it, then he has amigo. Edim are irrelevant, according to Abaye. That's what the Braita seems to be saying. Edim are irrelevant. Because according to you, Rabbah, if there were Edim in that case of the Reisha, who cares that we know he has it? Whether he knows or we don't know have it, he can go make a claim to have it returned, because you need to be returned to Edim. Right, says, well, Yolam de'ike Edim, v'ho de'ra'ah. It's a case where there are Edim, but only when we know he has it. Then he says to him, v'atu du'amart, mafkid etzel chavero be'edim, tzarich lefro'o be'edim. Wait a minute, if there are Edim, the Uman has no Edim that he returned it. If there are no Edim that he returned it, according to you, he's not believed. Who cares whether we know he has it or he doesn't have it? He doesn't have the evidence to counter your claim that you deposited with him with Edim. Amarle, how should it be? Rabbi says, I backed off of that position. I agree with you, Abaye. So this is a big deal here. Rabbi now says that Abaye is right. How right Abaye is, we'll see towards the end of the sugya, it's not clear. But at least over here, Rabbi backed away from his position that if you deposit it with Edim, tzarich lefor'o be'edim. Now, there still will be a difference between their positions, which is this. Rabbah now will require both items. In order for you to have evidence against the Uman, and to say the Uman will not believe the Echazaka, you need two things. You need Edim that you deposited it, and we need to know it's in his possession. Both of those items are needed in order for you to make a claim that will not allow the Uman to establish Echazaka. If either one of those is missing, then that's not the case. If you don't have Edim, or we don't have evidence that it's in his possession, then there is a Migo, and he is believed in both of those cases. The Migo is either, since there were no Edim of the deposit, then he's believed, because he can say whatever he wants. He can say that, lo yudvar me'olam, he never deposited to me as a craftsman. So then when he says, I returned it to you, or I bought it from you, he's going to be believed. If it is done with a case where there are Edim, but we don't know he has it, then just like Abaye, he's going to make the same Migo claim, which is, since he can say, I returned it to you, because someone who gives with Edim does not have to return with Edim, since the craftsman has a fair claim to say, I returned it already, he's also believed to say, Lukucha ibi adi. So what Rabbah says in the end is, unless you have both things working in your favor, that means both Edim, to identify you gave it to him as a craftsman, and we know it's in his possession, lack of either of those will open up a Migo and you'll be believed. Abaye only says that, if we know it's in his possession, the Migo is gone. If it's not in his possession, then the Migo is still alive. But he doesn't require you to have Edim to the fact that you deposited it. And it's enough that you simply make a claim that you deposited it with the craftsman. And then, if we know it's in his possession, the craftsman has no right to say, I returned it or I bought it from you, because the craftsman normally receives an object to work on it, and he's not going to have a Migo to say, Lukucha ibi adi. So this, now Rabbah changed his mind, but not completely to agree with Abaye. Rabbah at this point believes you need Edim and Ra'ah as evidence in order to block the Migos. Abaye says you simply need Ra'ah to know that it was there to block the Migo. So now Gemara continues, Meitiv Rava. L'su'uye the Rabbah. Rabbah posed the following question as support for Rabbah's position. Now the Rashbam claims over here that when Rabbah said this, but he says, Nirai Belai, Lashon Zamar Rava Bebeit Midrash. He said this in the Beit Midrash, Tanya Kavate de Rabbah, the Tiyuv de Debaye. I have a bright that is supportive of Rabbah's position, and is a problem for Abaye. This was a question posed by Rava directly to Abaye, that he asked Abaye about it, and he says, I have a braita that supports Rabba's position. Or you could argue simply that Rabba had a braita, and Rabba's understanding, after he works through the braita, seemingly brings support to Rabba's position. Not that Rava was particularly interested in asking on Abaye or bringing proof to Rabba's position, he simply was explaining the braita. Once he gives explanation to the braita, it does become a proof to Rabba and a problem for Abaye. The difference in the way you explain this would have to do with what Rava's position is. Is Rava saying this in support of Rabba because he identifies with Rabba's position? Or is Rava simply bringing up the braita as a question on Abaye's position and a proof to Rabba, but he doesn't necessarily subscribe to that position or agree to that position? So the question is, how much does Rava identify with his braita? Is it that Rava believes that this is the true meaning of the braita, and therefore he brought it specifically as a proof to Rabba's position and a question on Abaye's position? And therefore, Rava identifies with the braita and the position of Rabba. Or do we say that Rava simply was explaining or trying to understand this braita, and in the process of explaining this braita, it would turn out that this braita then is a proof for Rabba and a question of Abaye, but Rava doesn't necessarily identify with the braita or the position of Rabba, and that Rava might have an opinion that follows that of Abaye. He's just pointing out that this braita, when you explain it, does present an issue. This is the braita. Hanotein talito l'uman. Someone who gives over his clothing to a craftsman. Uman omer, shtayim katzatzteli. The uman says, you agreed to pay me two of whatever it is, two zuz, for my work. V'hal omer, lo katzatzteli l'chalachat. We only agreed to one. So now, obviously over here, you have a problem of modeh b'miksat. So we set up the case as a case of helach. I owe you one, and here it is. Take it. So he did a kezelok, so there's no modeh b'miksat, so we eliminate the problem of modeh b'miksat. Or it's a situation where he said he already paid him the wages that he thought that he owed, and therefore there's no longer an issue of modeh b'miksat. Kozman shatalit biyad uman, as long as the object is still with the craftsman, al balabait avi raya. The balabait is obligated to bring proof or evidence to the fact that he was owed to. Natan alo bizmano, if he gave it back to him in a timely fashion, nishba v'notel, then the craftsman has a right or a claim to make as to what he was going to get paid. Avar zmano, past that time, mutzimi chaveiro alav araya, then the burden of proof is on the one who needs to change the status quo. In that case, that will be the uman, because the customer is in possession of the object. So here you have different stages. These have to do with Gemarot that we saw together in Bava Metzia, as well as Gemarot that we're going to see in Shavuot as well, which is, we know that a craftsman is one of those individuals that is nishba vinotel, that he can take a shvua and collect his wages. The Gemara gives the reason as being that a sachir, a person who is a worker, focuses on his wages. He's one worker, he knows what he's getting paid, and he is one who really understands, really has knowledge about what's happening. The balabayit is tarud. He has many work, he has a lot of business going on. You're just one cog in a great system that he has to put together. Therefore, the likelihood that the balabayit makes a mistake is a little higher. Therefore, the chachamim flipped the shvua from the balabayit on to the sachir and gives the sachir the right to take a shvua and collect. Nishba vinotel. Chazal say that's only true bizmano, at the time period when the item is due. I mean, that it's at a time period when he's supposed to be paying the wages, and the sechir comes and makes his claim during that period of time, or that window of time, he is believed in nishba vinotel. Once it passes that time, the Gemara we saw in Bamatsiya and Shavuot says that the Baal Bayit is careful, number one, not to be over on the lav of letting wages go beyond the time period that they're supposed to. And number two is, the Gemara there says that he's notena libo. When it comes to the bottom line and he has to pay him and it comes down to it, he'll remember exactly what the deal was. Given those two pieces of information, once you go past the due date or the expiry for payment to this individual and being in compliance with the Torah rules to pay them on time, then the Baal Bayit is the one who is believed, and the Sechir will have to come up with evidence that he's owed the more money. In the case where it's in the time period where the wages are due, in that time period, the sachir gets extra believability, Because the Baal HaBayit is tarud and is busy with his dealings. The Uman knows what he's going to pay. We give him the right to take the Shva, Nishva, Vinotel. He takes it. Even though, as the Baal HaBayit Tosfot point out, that the Gemara in Boba Metziah says that in a situation where you have an argument about how much the Sakhir gets paid, that's not subject to this din of Nishva Vinotel. Nishva Vinotel is only about the payment that was due to the Sakhir when they agree around the price, that he has a right to make a claim to get paid because he knows whether he got paid or not. The Baal HaBayit is not focused. Whereas when it comes to the issue of the actual level of compensation, over there we say that the Baal HaBayit knows how much he offered to pay or how much he was willing to pay the Uman, and therefore the Uman doesn't have a right of Nishba Vinotel. But this Braita seems to indicate that he does have a right of Nishba Vinotel, even though the argument or the disagreement is about the level of wages. So the Baal HaTosafot point out that the Gemara in Shavuot establishes that this Braita is a Libra Demandamer that argues on that point. That this Braita is according to the one who says that even with wages, the Sakhir is believed and not the Baal HaBayit. And that's why this Braita allows him to be Nishva Vinotel over the issue of wages. On the other hand, in the beginning scenario, if the Talit, if the object is still with the Uman, then he has the upper hand because he hasn't returned it to him for payment yet. So the payment has not become due. Since the payment has not come due and he's in possession of the item, he is believed because of that possession. Now, the Gemara wants to understand, hey chidami, what exactly is the scenario here? If there are edim that it was given to the Uman, then lex edim, my kamre. Why don't we just ask the edim what was agreed between the parties? The edim will know what the wage agreement was because that was the major issue here. Ella lav delek edim. Must be a case where there are no edim. We have no edim to the fact that it was given over to this Uman, even though the individual himself knows that he gave it over to the Uman. Viktani Uman Mehemen. And there we say that the Uman is believed, Migo di Bayar Mele Lukucha Ibiyadi, because he could say, I purchased it, Mehemen Nami Aagre. Therefore, he is believed about his wages. So what you see here is that when the Uman still has the object in his possession, he has a right now to make a claim for his wages, because the Uman could make a claim, Lukucha Ibiyadi. I bought it. What do you mean I bought it? How can he make a claim if I bought it? He's an Uman. An Uman can't establish a chazakah. The answer is that he can establish a chazakah in certain circumstances. According to Rabbah, he can only not establish a chazakah when there are edim, and we know when it's his possession. If either one of those two items are missing, he can establish a chazakah. Over here, we already established that there were no edim over here, because if there were edim, we'd ask them what the agreement was. So therefore, we know there are no edim, and we also know that it is in his possession. He's telling you it's in his possession. He knows he has it in his possession. So given that, that's like Rabbah. Rabbah says that when you are lacking either edim or possession, either one of those is enough to grant you a migo. And that's what he's saying here. The Uman has a migo that he could say, I purchased it from you. Since he could have said, I purchased from you, he's also believed to say that I got a higher wage and you need to pay me the higher wage. And he can hold the object as collateral to get his higher wage up to the value of the object, which means that he has a fair claim for his wages up to the value of the object. Beyond the value of the object, he can't make a claim for wages because he can't make the migo anymore. The migo is that I bought it. So the most he could claim over here is the value of the object. If he's trying to claim an excess of the value of the object, he has no migo anymore, because he could say, Lukuchai biyadi, that wouldn't get him to the amount that he's due. So therefore, when he holds it, he has a right to make a claim for his wages up to the value of the object, and he will be believed by a migo. According to Abaye, who says that the only issue as to whether there's a migo or not is whether we know he has it or he doesn't have it. Over here, we know he has it. If we know he has it, according to Abaye, there's no migo. So then why is the Uman believed in this case? So that is the question that comes out of this Braita. Based on Rava's explanation of the Braita, it's a problem for Abaye in support of Rava's position. You see here, a lack of edim, but we know that he has possession of the item. It does establish a chazakah, and the Uman is allowed to make demands based on that chazakah. That chazakah only works according to Rabbah's position, not according to Rabbi's position. So the Baal HaTosafot asked, now that there is no evidence, the fact that he gave it to the Uman, and they're arguing over the price, in that case, the Baal HaBayit should be believed because it could say, Lo Yudvar Me'olam, it never happened. I never hired you at all. So why shouldn't he believe Bemigo about what the wages are, given the fact that he could deny the entirety of the claim? So the Bais Tosafot quote the Gemara in Shavuot that says, Dim Schar Shlo Beidim, Mitoch Sheyachol Lomar Lo Lo Schar Ticha Meolam, Yachol Lomar Lo Schar Ticha Venatati Lecha Sarcha. V'omer Reis, so the Bais Tosafot answer, De Lo Kashemide, De Chada De Pluta Hi Hotam. First of all, that position is subject to a machloket, and our Gemara could be following the other position. Vo Da'acha Leka Migo, Kevan Shemodu Mimiktzat. Over here, there's no Migo, because the Balabayit agrees that he paid him a portion of it, or that he owed him a portion of it. So he doesn't have a Migo to say, Lo Sechartichah Me'olam. I never hired you, therefore you should believe that he owes him one and not two, because he agrees he owes him one. So the Balabayit himself has eliminated his possibility of making that claim, and there's no more Migo over here. And that's why when there's no Edim, the Uman is believed, and the Balabayit doesn't have that Migo to say that he should be believed. The Gemara's answer is, well, that's not the case here. Olam Telek Edim, Behu Delo Ra'ah. You're right about the fact that there are no Edim over here, because if there were Edim, we would have established either what the transaction was between them, and what the wage amount was, or the Edim would also establish the fact that there was a transaction, and he can't say, Lo Yudvarei Me'olam. But, Behu Delo Ra'ah. It's a case where we don't have any evidence of the fact that it's still in his possession. But given that, even Abaye agrees in that case that the Uman can establish a chazakah, because there's a lack of Edim, also a lack of evidence that's in his possession. In that case, Abaye believed that you can establish a Migo that he could say, Chazarti Lecha, that I returned it to you. He has a right then to make a claim of Lekucha Yibiyadi. Since he can make the claim of the Kucha Yibiyadi and hold on to the object and say it's mine, he's then believed to say that the wages were this and this, up to the value of the object, because he could just keep the object and we wouldn't be able to take it away from him. Given that he has that right, when he comes and tells us what his wages are, he is believed in that instance. Meitiv Rav Nachman by Yitzchak. Nachman Yitzchak presents a problem for Rabba's Shito, which is something that we'd already discussed earlier in the Sugya, which is Uman Ein lo chazaka. That the Mishnah says that a craftsman does not have a chazaka. Uman hu dein lo chazaka, hacher yesh lo chazaka. It's only a craftsman that cannot establish a chazaka, but lay people or other people in these circumstances would be able to establish a chazaka. Hey chidami, what exactly is the scenario here where an uman doesn't have a chazaka, yet there would still be a differentiated view with regards to a layperson? Idi ika idim. If there are witnesses to the fact that either you gave it to the Uman to work on, or you gave it to this neighbor, layperson, to watch as a pikadon, Echer, Mayesh lo chazaka. Why then can the neighbor establish a chazaka? According to Rabbah, the only way that an Uman cannot establish a chazaka is when you both have a dim, and we know for certain that it is in possession of the Uman now. If I create that same case by a layperson, which says that it was deposited with him, it was brought as a pikadon with Edim, and we know it's his possession now, how can the neighbor establish a chazaka in that case? How can we say, Lukucha Hibiyadi, when we have Edim saying that it was deposited with him? You can't say, I gave it back to you already, because we know it's in his possession. There is no Migo there, even according to Rabbah. If that's the case, there's no distinction between an Uman and a neighbor or a layperson. And then why does the Mishnah say, Uman ain't lo chazaka? Could have said nobody can make a chazaka in that case. Ella, what must be the case? Lav de leka edim. It must be a case where there are no edim evidencing either the object being given to the craftsman to work on or to the layperson as a pikadon. Uktani, and it says here, Uman ain't lo chazaka. That the Uman does not have a chazaka. So what you see here is, the lack of edim does not necessarily give the Uman a right to a chazaka. According to Rabbah, if there are no Edim, then the Uman can establish a chazaka. Because if either you're missing Edim, or we're missing the identification of the object in the hands of the craftsman, the Uman has a right to establish a chazaka. Over here, we're saying that the case must be a case where there are no Edim. Given that the case is without Edim, how come the Uman can't establish a chazaka? Rabbah says in that case, an Uman can establish a chazaka. The answer must be like Abaye, which is that we know it's in possession of the Uman. In that case where we have no Edim, but yet it's in the possession of the Uman, you do not have a right to establish a chazaka. Because the default relationship between an individual and the craftsman is that of a craftsman. Given that, he has no Migo to say, I gave it back to you. Or lo ayu dvar me'olam, you sold it to me, you didn't give it to me. None of those work, and therefore he doesn't have a right to say, lekucha yibiyadi. The other hand, the default relationship between a person and his neighbor or a laypersony is a sale, not leaving giving it to him as a pikadol. Given that, when you hand it over to him, and we have no evidence as to what the relationship was at that time, but we know it's in the possession of the neighbor, the layperson, he has a migo. The migo is that he can say, he can say that I bought it up front or I bought it from a third party, and he would be believed in that case. Therefore, when he tells us, yes, it was deposited as a pikadon, and I returned it to you, or you sold it to me afterwards, there he should be believed, because his possession is an indication of chazaka. And that's where the din will be different between an uman and a layperson. But that means that it's a case without a din. For Rabbo, in that case, an uman can establish a chazaka. He's not precluded from a chazaka, and therefore, to yufta, the Rabbo to yufta, that fact that we need to distinguish between an uman and a layperson presents a very big difficulty for Rabbo's position, because Rabbo narrows significantly the areas where an uman cannot make a chazaka. That narrow case, a layperson also would not be able to create a chazaka or establish a chazaka, because you have a deem to the fact that it was given either as work for the craftsman or a pikadon to the layperson, and we know you have it still. So you have no migo, you have no claims other than to say, I bought it, and you're not believed in that case, because the relationship started on a different note. And given that, Rabba can't come up with that distinction, and therefore, this is a huge refutation of Rabba's position. Now, given that that was a huge refutation of Rabba's position, it's not clear amongst the Rishonim how much of Rabba do we reject. As far as someone who gives it to a craftsman, they deem, you do not have to return it if they deem. There, Rabba clearly agrees to Abaye because he admitted to Abaye's position. The only question we have is whether a deem are completely irrelevant or they do have some relevance in the case. Although the Rif goes as far as to say that an uman is never able to establish chazaka, even in a case where there are no edim, and we have no idea whether it's in his possession. He has no migo to be eman, and therefore he can never make a claim of lekucha hibiyadi in those instances. So that would be even against the Abaye's position and say that there is no way for an uman to establish a chazaka whatsoever. Elim Kaini has edim to the fact that it was sold to him, or evidence of through a shtar that it was sold to him. But otherwise, he can't establish a chazaka, which means that the Rif is saying to Yufta the Rabba, so we drop Rabba, but not only do we drop Rabba, we even drop Abaye and say there's no case where you can establish a chazaka. Almost all the Rishonim take issue with that Rif and argue on the Rif. The question then is just whether Edim make a difference or not, but everybody agrees that if there are no Edim, and we do not know it's in his possession, he has a Migo, and that Migo will make it believable when he says, the Kucha hi biyadi, that I purchased it. So here's the Rashbam's summary of the sugya. V'hashta shemina mi'ocha. From here we conclude. The mafkid eitzel chayvero be'edim. The person deposited something with edim. Ein tzarich lakzir lo be'edim. You do not need to return it with edim. Da'ha hader be'rabo the gabay abaye. Because that, the Gemara explicitly said that Rabo reversed his position and agreed to abaye. U'bemochar et abaye the kaman paskinan. And later on in the Masech we come to the conclusion. Shalfilu mafkid etzol chavero b'shtar. Even if you deposit something with a shtar, ain't zirich lakzir lo be'edim. You don't have to return it with edim. Minesh ma'inan. From there we would conclude. Shemafkid etzol chavero be'edim. V'adayin yesh lo l'pikadon b'yado. Lifaneinu. Person deposited something with his friend with edim. And the object is still in the possession of the individual. She'enu yachol liton chergzarti l'cha. Because now he loses his claim that I returned it to you. Liton shemachroli, and then to make the claim that you sold it to me, acharkach, after that point in time. Einu ne'eman, he's not believed. That's exactly like Abaye, which is that when there are edim, but we know that it's in your possession still, you have no believability. V'hani mile bishra'ah v'tafas. It's a case where we saw it in his possession, he's trying to take it away. Avalim lo ra'ah mehemen. But in a case where we do not know if it's in his possession, then he is believed because of the migo. The migo that he could have said, I returned it to you. He's also believed that he can say, I returned it to you when I bought it from you, or that I bought it from you. Ubishvua. He still would have to take a shvua to substantiate that position. Vahani mileish mafkid etzlo be'edim. That's only true if you deposited it with edim. Avamara talito biyad chaviro. If he sees his object with his friend, umakarin bo edim shayashol zeh. And other edim know that it belonged to him at one point. He says, what are you doing with my stuff? He says that I bought it, he is believed. You can't just make a claim that I deposited something with my friend if you don't have a deem to that effect. There's no existing relationship or default relationship that says that I deposited it rather than I sold it to you. Therefore, your friend is believed to say that you sold it to him, and you can't take it away from him. But that is only if he's not an uman. Avarat alitobi aduman. He sees his object together with the craftsman. V'amar uman lekuach ubiyadi. Eino ne'eman elim ken yesh lo edim shel chol mizeh bifneim. Then the uman is not believed. Aval im lo ra ubiyado. If you don't have evidence to the fact that the uman has it in his possession, then he's ne'eman b'migo. To say lekuach ubiyadi. Afa pisha masar lo b'edim. Even if you gave it to him with edim. Because there you have amigo that he could have said that I returned it to you. Therefore, he's believed to say that I purchased it from you. Now, that's only in uman. It's only true when it's an object that craftsman normally fixes. It's an object that's a part of his profession. But if it is some other object that is not part of his professional capacities, then he doesn't have a status of an uman. He becomes a layperson for these other objects. Now, that's all true. All of that distinction has to do with the cases where these aren't objects that are normally lent out or rented out. But if these are objects that are normally lent out or rented out, then the layperson also loses their ability to establish a chazakah, because then there's almost a default status that the object came into your possession as a borrower, as a renter, similar to when you give the object to the uman, that we assume that he's taking it as a craftsman and not as a purchaser. And that's what takes away his migo. So it's over here by lay people or neighbors. You would lose the migo if it's an object that's normally lent out or rented out to neighbors, because then the default is not assuming that he sold it to you, but rather that he lent it to you. So if your neighbor has a hammer and you have a deem to the fact that it's your hammer, that says people normally lend out hammers, then he can't make a claim that I bought it from you. Because he has to have evidence to that claim, because we don't have a migo that says, oh, because you could have said, lo yu dvarim olam, that you never lent it to me. When he says, you know, you lent it to me or you sold it to me, he's believed over there because you normally lend an object like that, so he doesn't have a right to establish a chazakah through possession. Now then, if it's an object that people don't normally lend out to their neighbors, he can establish a chazakah simply through possession. Because possession is an indication of chazakah. And unless you have evidence to the contrary, which means that you have a deem that say it was deposited with him, then he has a right to make a claim that I purchased it, and that will be a fair claim given the fact that he's in possession of the item. If you have a deem that you deposited it with him, and we know it's in his possession, then he has no claim, because we have a deem that deposited it with him, and you have no migo anymore. But if we don't know he has it in his possession, and we have a deem that he deposited with him, again, he's believed, because it's a migo that he can say, I returned it to you. He's also believed to say, lekuach o biyadi. That's all by a layperson. By uman, it has a different din, because by definition, we assume that whatever is deposited with him, he is acting as a function as an uman. And given that, whether they're edim to the deposit or not edim to the deposit, the uman is not believed if we know that he has it in his possession. If we don't know that he has the object in his possession, then he is believed, because he can say, I returned it to you. Just like he has a right to say, I returned it to you without edim, which is fine. So too, he can say, lekucha hi biyadi. Correct. In that case, right, it has to be an object that is part of the professional duties of this craftsman. If it's another object, then he becomes like a layperson with any other object, because that object has nothing to do with his profession. All right, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the top of Mem Vav Amud Aleph.